Well, Stephen, thank you so much for sitting down with me today to have a conversation. We're doing this because something pretty big is happening in December. Do you want to let everybody know what that is?
Yes, I am retiring at the end of December after 33 and a third years here at Indiana Public Radio.
33 and a third.
That seems appropriate.
It does indeed. And we'll get to more on that in a few minutes. I have a lot of questions for you today, Stephen. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. What comes to mind when I say classical music?
Well, my life, really, since I was a boy, maybe 7 or 8 years old, and I just developed a passion for classical music. Also, the term, what comes to my mind when I hear somebody say classical music, is my fear that they will think that this is something that they don't like because they maybe had an experience that they didn't appreciate or didn't enjoy. The term is just so broad that I don't really even like to use it, but I think I know what people mean when mm-hmm. they say classical music. But I wouldn't want anyone to dismiss, you know, 1,000 years of anything, painting or science or art history or world history or anything, thinking I'm just not interested in that. Because if somebody said I don't like popular music, I would want to know, well, what are you talking about? You don't like jazz? You don't like hip-hop? You don't like Stephen Foster parlor songs of the 19th century? I mean, all of these things were considered popular music.
Right.
So the term classical music makes me a little uncomfortable just because I'm afraid people will not give it a chance.
Mm-hmm. When you gave it a chance as a young boy, do you remember what it was about it that drew you to it? And what was the circumstance surrounding that first listen?
Well, I was fortunate that I had a really good public education general music program. We had a teacher who was kind of a circuit rider among the schools in our consolidated district. And this was a small rural district in southeastern Iowa. But we had a teacher named Ariel Hammond who would go from school to school within the district, the elementary schools. And we had her for 6 years between first grade and sixth grade. And she would show us film strips of Peter and the Wolf and Claire de Lune and Carnival of the Animals. And I was just captivated by all these different classical instruments and the sounds that they made. And my mom would play piano at home. She would accompany the school kids for solo day and things like that. So I was hearing classical music from a very early age, but neither of my parents was terribly conversant about what classical music was and all that. But I started reading books from the library in our little town and the school library, and it just kind of blossomed from there.
Wow. Did you study it in college?
Yes. I have 2 degrees in music history. My bachelor's degree from Central College in Pella, Iowa. And then I did a master's in historical musicology at the University of Texas in Austin.
What brought you to Indiana Public Radio? In other words, you know, what led you to the job here?
Well, I'd been working in Indianapolis doing classical music announcing, but I'd resigned that position in May of 1988. And I was looking for another job, and I hoped I could stay in public radio, in classical radio. And I was actually down at WFIU in Bloomington one day, and I talked to Don Glass, and I was kind of saying, do you know of any radio jobs? And he said, well, actually, there was one at Ball State. And he looked at it and he said, oh, the cutoff date for it was Friday, and this was on a Monday I was there. Hmm. He said, but sometimes they keep these searches open a little longer, so why don't you contact John Iden, who was the station manager? And I had an interview, which was the first time I remember being interviewed by an entire staff in one room at the same time, which was a little intimidating. But I was hired and started in August of 1988.
Wow. Do you remember that first day at the station? What was it like?
Not really. I think the first day or two generally is, you know, you're over at human resources and you're meeting all sorts of people and signing all sorts of things. But we started out, when I started, we were still in the Arts and Communication building, which was kind of behind Emmons. Mm-hmm. And I can't really picture the studio very well. I can remember where my office was because I looked out at a nice pine tree. But within about a month, we moved into the Ball Communications building. Mm. And I remember moving the library about, I don't know how many thousands of albums, on Labor Day of 1988. Stuart Vanderwilt had arranged with Rig and Derry to let us borrow all of these milk crates. And as it so happened, the albums were about a quarter of an inch wider than the crate. So instead of filling a crate, we could only put about 10 diagonally in each crate. But we moved the whole library on Labor Day across the street and set everything up. And I think we went on the air November 14th, 1988, from the Ball Communication Building. So those first few months, all I remember is just a lot of moving from that building into the Ball Communications Building. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've moved since then.
Yes, absolutely. Now in the David Letterman Building. You mentioned the music library. When we have tours in the building at the station, your music library is the first stop on that tour. Talk about how it's grown and changed over the years since you've been here.
Well, we had some CDs when I came, but that was still kind of the early years of compact discs, and everything was primarily on LP. Now, of course, it's long since been on CD. We sold the albums years ago. They needed that room for offices, and they needed that space that the albums were taking up. And it kind of broke my heart to see a lot of those things go, because I knew I'd never see them on CD. But now it's about 5,000 cataloged CDs here in the Letterman Building. And it's just, it's kind of been my baby. I've just seen that. I've sort of raised it from a child. And it's just a wonderful resource that we have.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your process in the morning, because I know that you spend some time in there kind of curating the selections that you're going to play each morning.
Yeah, I'm usually working a couple of days mm-hmm. in advance of what I'm going to play. I have to leave some wiggle room because I don't know how long the breaks will be, and you know, I may have talked a little longer than I thought or not as much, and so I need an extra minute or something, so I can't program it down to the last minute, but I'm working several days ahead usually, and I just try to mix it up. I don't want people to think, okay, it's 10:30, so this means that this is Mozart, or this is going to be piano music to start the program each morning, or whatever. I just like to keep a wide variety of this so-called classical music that's really everything from medieval dances to film music, just kind of keep it a little bit unpredictable too. I think people like to be surprised. If you want to know what's coming next, you'll just listen to your own collection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. May the 4th is probably my favorite.
I know why.
Day.
Yeah, I've been, for your sake, Michelle, put on some, and also because it's just fantastic music, mm-hmm. I put on something from one of the Star Wars films.
Yes.
Though, as you know, I don't know that much about Star Wars. I saw the original in a theater in 1977, or maybe by the time we got it, it was 78, and I haven't seen any of it since, but the music is wonderful.
So fantastic. Wonderful. And I appreciate you doing that each and every year. That's fantastic. You have welcomed a lot of guests into the studios, into the IPR studios. Tell me about some of your favorites.
Well, a few years ago, we had an Italian string quartet come by. They were kind of just touring public stations in this country. I'm not sure why, but they asked if they could come here, and I said, sure. And we didn't have them on the air live, but we recorded them playing in our studio, and I did an interview with them. And they were just four incredibly nice guys. They even put up with a little of my bad Italian, and they were just incredible people to work with. And I remember giving them a couple of bobbleheads when they left, And just within the last year, I contacted one of the violinists, Cristiano Gualco, and said, do you still happen to have that Bartok bobblehead? Because he did a little thing on YouTube showing that they were using it kind of like a little mascot to put it on their dashboard as they drove around in their rented van. And he would have him say, you know, Bartok, would you like some hamburger? And he would have him nod his head. And so that was neat. Some others, we had all three winners of the violin competition of Indianapolis, the last competition, the three winners, the gold, silver, and bronze medalists were all here. Glenn Kwok brought them to the studio, and they all played. I think that was live. I can't remember. And one of the really neat things, though it was breaking format a little bit, was this Irish trio called Socks in the Frying Pan that came here, I can't remember how many years ago that is now. Mm-hmm. It's time has really flown. But they did some Celtic music live that morning on Morning Musicale. And so, yeah, there have been some great guests. I interviewed Hilary Hahn when she was here to receive an honorary doctorate degree. And, it's just some have been phone interviews and some have been here in the studio. But a lot of great memories.
That's wonderful. After more than three decades, there have to be some funny stories. On-air bloopers, things that, like you said, you can plan all day long, but sometimes the unexpected get you. Do you have any that you can share?
Well, I don't recall ever saying something on the air I shouldn't have. I know I've violated the number one rule, which is treat every microphone as if it were live at all times. And there are a couple of composers whose names I have to be very careful with, and I always make a point of spelling them, and then I sometimes think, oh, wait, did I really spell that right? One of them is Julius Fucik, and his name is spelled F-U-C-I-K, and another is Robert Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S, and there was one day I was so tired, I think I went and asked Angie if she had listened to the last break I had done, because I think I was so worried about spelling it, you know, the naughty way that I had, but I don't think I had. I think we would have heard by now. This was several years ago, and I think someone would have called by now.
Yes, absolutely.
And another little funny anecdote I can remember from maybe my first year here. We had a student named Leland Franklin, who I think was already here when I came in 1988. And he was one of our student announcers. He needed some news, and he played jazz on Saturday nights and so on. And a very nice, kind of quiet, unassuming guy. And he, for some reason, was outside my office two or three times. And I said, well, why are you always camping out in front of my office? And the next morning, maybe it was over the weekend, but anyway, the next morning I came in, he had pitched this large tent complete with a camp stool and a Coleman lantern. And it was such a good visual gag that I gave him credit for that. And in fact, a few years ago, Leland was the onstage announcer at one of our Christmas radio dramas. And I reminded him of that, and he sort of seemed embarrassed. And I said, no, that was one of the funniest things that anyone has ever done. The length that he would go to just to make that joke. So I'm sure I'll think of other things, you know, in my retirement. But that was one early on that I thought was very funny.
That is a great one. What do you think you will miss the most about Morning Musicale?
Well, it will be selecting the music and choosing it and building the playlists. To be honest, I've never been that crazy about being on the air, but I've loved putting the program together. So I'm going to miss the library. As I said, I've watched it emerge, and I've filled in gaps of things we didn't have. So I'm definitely going to miss that. But I'm also going to miss the people and putting New Yorker cartoons on people's doors. I think I put some on yours.
Yes, you have.
And when there's one about dogs, I usually give that to Dottie because I know she's a big dog person. And so just the office camaraderie and the bantering and all of that. It's I've worked with very nice people for a long, long time.
And you have a lot of dedicated listeners. Care to share some thoughts about your listeners over the years?
Well, they have been wonderful, and I'm so glad I've met a lot of them, here in Muncie, but also when we've been out doing other things. I know there are people who listen regularly to the program, Marion and North Manchester, I think there's somebody, and it's been nice to meet them. And then I think of people that were on the air that that I was able to help get them on the air, like Mildred Trivers was, we called her the poet of Twin Ponds Lane. Mm-hmm. And for years, she was in her 80s then, she would come in and do a poetry segment, and I produced that, and I got to know her. And Bill Liston, who was my friend from the English department, was doing drama reviews even before I came. Mm-hmm. I think of those people, and just some of the first people I met when I came to Muncie, and maybe the first station event. I still picture those people listening to the station, and unfortunately we've lost some of them, but there are just so many wonderful people in this community that have made this work, and I appreciate everything they've said to me over the years.
Oh, that's lovely. So what's next for Stephen Turpin?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but I know I want to do an awful lot of reading. I love to read, and I want to read a lot of my favorite authors, Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, James Thurber, Garrison Keillor. If the winter isn't too bleak, I might finally tackle some of those big, thick Russian books that I've been avoiding, like Crime and Punishment and War and Peace, and I'm going to have time. And Elizabeth and I love to travel, so we're hoping we can do a lot of traveling again. We want to get back to Europe, and we've got plans to do that next year, you know, if everything has opened up again and it's safe to do that.
Wonderful. That sounds like a great time. All right, it's time for the rapid fire questions. Uh-oh. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, ready? Here we go. Favorite composer?
You know, for years I never committed myself on that, but in the last year or two, I've decided it's Schubert. And I've said that on the air a few times.
Favorite classical musician?
You mean other than my wife?
Yes. Well, I mean, you could say your wife. Of course that would be number one. Yeah.
I'm very fond of the playing of James Ennis, the violinist. With pianists, maybe Andras Schiff, Daniel Barenboim, Kenny Broberg, who was here a few years ago. He was the silver medalist at the Van Cliburn competition, I think in 2017, and he came and played with the Muncie Symphony, and I've watched some of his stuff on YouTube, and he's just an incredibly musical person, a very sensitive player, and so I'm big on Kenny Broberg. I don't know. There are just so many. It's kind of the last person I heard. I think, yeah, I admire what they can do. I was kind of an oboist for years, but never really got good. But I can any instrument played really well, I certainly appreciate.
Favorite symphony?
By that, do you mean an orchestra or a favorite symphony, a piece of music?
Let's do favorite group, like as an orchestra, and then your favorite piece of music.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've got a really soft spot for the Philadelphia Orchestra because as a kid, that was one of kind of the big three that I had albums by. My dad bought a stereo when I was probably 8 years old. And that was, you know, the big honking piece of furniture that just happened to play records.
Yes.
And he joined the Columbia Tape and Record Club or something. And I was very flattered because he said, I'm going to let you, Stephen, pick out the selections each month, you know. And the Columbia record label had three major orchestras and conductors signed to it. The Philadelphia Orchestra with Eugene Ormandy, the New York Philharmonic with Leonard Bernstein, and the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell. So those were the three orchestras that I really started listening to. And the Philadelphia Orchestra always had just a wonderful sound, especially in the string section. Mm-hmm. So to this day, I really love the Philadelphia Orchestra. But again, it's hard to say just one.
Sure.
This isn't as rapid fire as you were hoping.
No, that's all right. That's okay. And so favorite piece of music?
Maybe Beethoven Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony.
Mm. All right. Favorite CD in your music library, specifically the music library here?
probably a recording on Nimbus. The catalog number is 5068. I don't know how long I'm going to remember all of these catalog numbers, but I have stored an awful lot of them in my head. Mm-hmm. It's a recording by the English String Orchestra, and William Boughton is the conductor, and it's music by George Butterworth and Frank Bridge and Hubert Perry. And the recording sound itself, it was recorded in the Great Hall at the University of Birmingham in England, and Boughton's interpretation and the music, and it's a bestseller for Nimbus. It always has been. So I'm not the only person who loves that recording. But again, there are just so many. But if I had to pick one thing, I think that would be it.
All right. Favorite opera?
You know, I don't really know opera that well. Elizabeth grew up listening to opera, and she and her sister would draw little scenes when they were kids, and they'd, you know, do little cutout dolls of things. And
oh,
so
wow.
Opera is really, really what she knows. But that's one of the things I want to do in retirement, is finally sit down and learn some of these operas that I might know one or two arias from. But I'll probably start with Mozart.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. Favorite instrument?
Anything that's played really well. Mm. Maybe piano.
Okay. And favorite baseball team?
As if you didn't know.
I had to throw that in there.
Yeah. Well, it's my guilty pleasure that yes. I am a fan of the Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. And my career here at IPR has been bookended by two miserable seasons for them. They started 1988, losing their first 21 games, which set a record. And this year, 2021, they lost 19 straight at one point. But the reason I like the Orioles, having grown up in southeastern Iowa, that doesn't seem likely. But I loved my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Todd. And she remembered the Orioles as the St. Louis Browns. She was from northeastern Missouri. And I just thought the world of her. And at that time, the Orioles were in the World Series 2 or 3 years in a row. So it was easy to jump on the Baltimore Orioles bandwagon. But to this day, it's really a tribute to just how special a teacher she was that I'm an Orioles fan through thin and thinner.
That is wonderful. I don't believe I have ever heard that story before. I love that. I love that. The impact of a wonderful teacher.
That's right.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So any games in the future in person?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
I have a map with pins I can put in for each city, minor league and major league city. I've had that in my office. And I wasn't able to put any pins in it this last couple of years. But I'm hoping that we can get to some parks and see some games again.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
So anything that I forgot to ask that you would like to talk about or share?
It's just been, in a way, I can't believe it's been 33 years. But so many people I've worked with over the years that I just will always remember. Mm-hmm. You among them, Michelle.
Oh, thank you so much, Stephen. You will be missed. I'm a daily listener. Every weekday morning, it's on in my office. It's going to be very odd not to hear your voice every morning. I may just have to find some old. Have we ever recorded you on the air, your show, that I can just play over and over again?
Probably somewhere buried somewhere, some old reel-to-reel tape or something. So there's no danger of your being able to hear it because we don't have any of those machines anymore.
Well, so. We will have to find them somewhere because I can't be the only one that's going to need some help with this transition. So, well, Stephen, thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me. Congratulations on 33 years at Indiana Public Radio and best wishes for your retirement.
Thank you very much, Michelle.